Namaste. So someone has asked a question about failure and success and how to face it. There is a beautiful aphorism of Sri Aurobindo and we can read it from that. The aphorism says, O misfortune, blessed art thou. Blessed be thou, for through thee I have seen the face of my lover. So, first thing important is to understand that success and failure both are very, very temporary passing events. And we give a lot of importance to it, unfortunately, because we are too much focused on the desired self, on the outer life, brief outer life of man. And so we think, if I do well by social standards, I am a successful person. And it's also a lot of collective suggestion. But true success is, if we really look deep enough, is to do what deep within you are born for. Which means we must first discover what we are really meant to do, what we are meant to be. In very simple words, it's to fulfill God's will in us. But that's a tall calling. By the time most human beings become aware that there is something like a God will operating in the cosmos or creation, already a lot of life has passed. Because most of the time we are taught from childhood, you have to do, you have to bear the consequences. Everything is you. So this idea of God's will is one of, I mean, it's there, implicit in mystic literature, but never brought out to the fullness. But we see both Sri Krishna and especially Sri Aurobindo brings it out to its fullness, that basically there is only one will, it's the divine will operating in this world. But quite naturally it gets distorted in the human vessel. It gets mixed up with desire. Sometimes the divine will is for something and we also desire it. But the problem is that when the desired self gets mixed in it, it starts introducing errors. Why? Because it gets very impatient. So if we really look at life's curve, we start, you know, all of us have been implanted a dream. There is a dream in matter. But for a long time, matter is not aware of its dream. So this dream emerges in the form of life. And we see life tries to realize that dream at the most material level by filling this world with colors and variety and all kinds of forms. Then in the animal, this animals don't have conscious dreams, but they're driven by desire. So in human beings also, this dream takes the form of desire. So what does the desire do? Desire tries to misread the script because it doesn't understand the script. And it tries to achieve something by force. It tries to push destiny. I will get it any which way because I want it. So this is the law of desire. And quite naturally, since it doesn't respect time, since it doesn't respect the right law of things, it meets with failure because it wants to, also because it wants to possess, grab, it thinks that's how my dream will be fulfilled. For example, the dream is, let's say, of a perfect love or a, you know, perfect knowledge or a perfect life. That's what most people dream about. But desired self translates it into that if you have certain objects, you will have a perfect life. If you have a lot of money, you will have a perfect life. But perfect life will grow from within. That's what Sri Aurobindo reveals to us, like a flower. A perfect flower is never an artificially manufactured flower. It's just called as an artificial flower. It can be a perfect design. But a perfect flower will be a seed blossoming into a flower. It's always from within outwards. So a perfect life can only be created by the discovery of a perfection which is within us. The source of the dream. That's why, where is the dream coming from? From the source. If you really look at the way this creation has manifested, so it's very interesting. So it starts with truth, which is pragya. It holds all possibilities within itself. Then out of that totality of truth, a section is taken into what is known as Hiranyagarbha. He takes all these truths and turns it into cosmic dreams. And then this cosmic dream begins to realize itself on the earth, which is where it enters into the waking state. So this is how the whole process of manifestation takes place. And that's what we see in Savitri, that these are the two levels at which the dreams begin to express. First is at the level of the ideal. So the cosmic dream in a human being at its highest takes the form of an ideal. At the lowest it takes the form of a desired self. And desired self brings restlessness, the will to possess, acquire. But that's not how you can ever realize the dream of perfect life upon earth. At any level. Be it relationship, be it a job, be it a career, be it anything. So next level is emotions. So what do emotions do? Desire wants to grab. Emotions just build a very rainbow colored lovely bubble. So you start believing it's there, and in that bubble you live, in that bubble people live with you, and you know. So emotions try to realize it by painting, by the power of imagination. So it imagines, fantasizes, and there is a wonderful world. But the moment these bubbles, you see on the seashore, people take out bubbles. So bubbles are very nice, colored, children are enjoying. But the moment they touch something, it breaks. So the moment these bubbles touch earth, they break. Because you cannot build a perfect world on the basis of emotions. Just as you cannot do it on the basis of desires, you cannot do it on the basis of emotions and imagination. So the next step it takes is, still evolving further, the dream of a perfect life takes the form of an ideal in the mind. Death calls it the malady of the mind. So there are some people who are evolved enough that they have a disease called incorrigible search for an ideal. It's called as disease. But they want an ideal world. They can't live without it. So dream has already climbed to quite a high level of, you know, they dream of a perfect world, perfect life, based on certain ideals. But the problem is mind, though, it comes very close, but it doesn't quite conceive. For example, its idea of a harmonious life. All people who are idealistic want a harmonious life. But if you ask people, what is the idea of a harmonious life? So one is, there are no quarrels, till then it's very fine. This perfect understanding, how do you have a perfect understanding now? People tolerate each other, respect each other. Now, these are ideas of an ideal. I'm talking at a very human level. But you realize that even to realize that becomes impossible. So, at some point, one may begin to feel that God is only playing a spoil sport. He gives us dreams which can never be realized. So people, when they see that at different levels their dreams cannot be realized, unfortunately, they get tired, weary, and they take to sannyas or they turn away from life. Does the dream die? No, it doesn't die, because it's a cosmic dream. It's a dream of the Lord. So what it takes the form of expressing itself wherever you go. You may go to an ashram or a monastery, but the dream will not die. So you are again doing the same thing, trying to impose, trying it this way, that way. But the beauty of this dream is, this dream refuses to die. Just as the soul survives death of the body, the dream survives the death of the body, because this dream is implanted in the soul. It returns back. So now Sri Aurobindo is revealing to us that this dream can only be fulfilled when you have the true basis. What is the true basis? You have to go to the source from where the dream has emerged. You have to draw your strength from there. Not that go to the source means cross all the layers of consciousness, find that ultimate. That's not an easy task. But connect to the source. Because source has given the dream, source can give the power to fulfill it. There is no other way that you can, without connecting to the source. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, when people asked him, are you against friendship and affection and all, he said, no. On the contrary, friendship, affection, they are indispensable notes in the perfection that we are seeking. But from our experience, we have found that human nature, being what it is, based on the ego, it becomes its very opposite. So we want them to be founded on a true, secure, and psychic and spiritual basis. So the first thing is to discover that. Of course, dream will take its own forms, desired self, all this will continue. But know that all that is happening right now is only to propel us towards seeing the face of the lover. So it's not that ki some people can do it probably, that okay, from today we'll refuse to do anything with anyone or this world and I'll just meditate, plunge into ascetic. No, then the dream is being crushed. So one goes through life, goes through all these phases, but remembers that one has to go towards that. When we look at life like that, then we see that failures are a greater grace than success. Success can be a big trap, but failure is something which will remind you that look here, this is not what you are seeking. So this is what Sri Aurobindo is explaining so beautifully. When things happen which are not what we expect, Mother is explaining this aphorism. What we hope for, what we want, which are contrary to our desires, in our ignorance we call them misfortunes and lament. So it's ignorance which judges it as misfortune. But if we were to become a little wiser and observe the deeper consequences of these very same events, we would find that they are leading us rapidly toward the divine, the beloved, whereas easy and pleasant circumstances encourage us to dally on the path, to stop along the way, to pluck the flowers of pleasure which present themselves to us and which are too weak or not sincere enough to reject resolutely, so that our march forward is not delayed. So sometimes when we are very weak, we cannot reject the flowers because they are too nice. So divine says, okay, some more time. So after some time, the flowers will either fade or he'll take it away. That is the fortune, that is the grace. But we call it misfortune. Of course, we go through that period of whatever. You know that story of Narad who asked Sri Krishna, what is Maya? Sri Krishna says, go and fetch me some water. And in the process of fetching water, he falls in love, gets married, and then forgets after 12 years, suddenly there is a fire, children and everybody dies, and then he is very twisting and turning, cruel God, cruel God, cruel God. And then Krishna says, first, can you get me some water? I'll explain my cruelty to you. So he remembers that, you know, that's what his understanding. No, this is not that we have to become ascetics, Sri Aurobindo and the mother, but go through life with open eyes, knowing the present state of imperfection. You cannot build a perfect world based on our own imperfect state. It is pure logic and common sense. So as we go through life, our goal should be to strive for the perfection, strive with whatever mind, emotion, imagination, effort, whatever psychic impulsion, if it is there, strive to the utmost. But know that the hour of fulfillment will come only when things are based on the true deeper state. So this is what we should remember. And sometime when the divine sees that we are not, we are getting completely driven by simply the surface self or just that desired self, then he also sometime plays the cruel fellow, because, you know, he has to do that. He plucks away the flowers because, you know, we are bent for Brahma Kamal. So he doesn't want us to be satisfied with... I have often felt why Mother has named water lily also as avatar, no, in one of the places. It is very interesting. Otherwise, wealth of Mahalakshmi. So it resembles the lotus, but lotus is lotus. But it does give a resemblance to lotus. One must already be very strong, very far along the way to be able to face success. Success is the last test, Mother has said one place. If success doesn't make our head swollen, then we are really ready. Otherwise, in failure, one remembers God. But in success, yes, yes, I am, you know. Sir, you are such a good writer. Yes, yes, yes. Or we may say outwardly, it's all Mother's. But inside, it's like, you know, after all, instrument, you know. Instrument is so important. So, like Udar, he went out, Udarda, America, and people said he has become a guru. So when he came back, and you know, he looked like a really royal person, smart, handsome. So when he came back, mother said, "What, Udhar? Is it true that in America you became a guru?" "No, no, 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 mother." "Good. Otherwise I'll break your head." Says, "Please, mother, break the head." But this is how, when success comes, that time to remain. In fact, true success. How do you know that, you know, one is recognizing that this success is not your own, but it is the divine gift of grace? It will make you humble, because you realize that, well, that's how it, in Hindi there is a phrase that the tree which is burdened with fruits, the branches tend to hang low. So because you realize, you become humble. That same story of who was this man, the famous mystic poet, Rahim Khana Khana. So he, whenever he would give to somebody, he would have his eyes lower and lower. And he said, because Ras Khan, not Rahim Khan Khana, Ras Khan. So he would say that, "What can I do? You know, when I give, I feel so humbled that the Creator has given me so much, and I am able to, you know, part with it. It's all nothing but the Creator. So when people appreciate me, I feel very embarrassed, because I know it's not me, but somebody has given me." So to be able to bear success and yet remain humble is very difficult. Those who can do this, those who are strong, do not run after success. They do not seek it and accept it with indifference. This is, and one of the differences again we see between Arjuna and Karna. So Karna is all the time wanting to prove a point. But for Arjuna, he is one of the most skillful archers, not in Mahabharata actually. He is overshadowed because, you know, Shri Krishna is all the time and people appreciate Karna. But just in his skills, he was a master archer in all times. You can compare him with, even people have compared him with Lord Rama. And, you know, because in night he could shoot arrows with perfection. He had all the great astras which anybody could imagine. For instance, Narayani Astra, which is used by Ashwatthama. So only other people who had it was Shri Krishna, Dronacharya and Arjuna. Whether it be Brahmastra, Pashupatastra, which could destroy the entire Kaurava army in just a fraction of a moment. And yet he kept it all reserved in his reservoir, shooting those arrows. Because he is humbled, he is, you know, it's Krishna. I just want to do what you want me to do. So that's what he's saying, that those who are strong, this is the sign of the strength. Because strong people don't have to prove a point. It is the weak who want to prove a point. So they will kill, they will murder, they'll do all kinds of things, create hangama to prove a point. Look, we are so powerful. But the strong don't have to declare. You know, a lion, if you see in Masai Mara, it's so nice to see the lions from this much distance, just a few feet away from you. So you're going in a jeep and they'll take you very close to a whole lion family. So there is a lion sitting majestically with his, we imagine, Mrs. Lion and lioness and 4 or 5 cubs. And he looks at you royally. He's not worried that you have 5, 6, 7 human beings. He looks at you. Try doing anything and see. So that quiet power, same you will see in an elephant, majestically. But you look at a dog, you know, if it doesn't know you, he'll jump, try to get close to you, or if it feels suspicious, will bark at you. So strength is always something which is quiet. For they know and appreciate the values. So those who have achieved success, he's saying, for they know and appreciate the value of the lashes given by unhappiness and misfortune. But ultimately, the true attitude, the sign and proof that we are near the goal, is not, fortunately, visions and voices, is not the adulations of people. But the sign that we are near the goal is a perfect equality which enables us to accept success and failure, fortune and misfortune, happiness and sorrow with the same tranquil joy. Not just, okay, what to do? tranquil joy. Why? Because of a complete trust in the divine, and one endures the path. One knows there is no other way. For all these things become marvelous gifts that the Lord in his infinite solicitude showers upon us. Here is a very interesting few aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo. Because a good man dies or fails and the evil live in triumph. What is the conclusion we draw? So, before we draw a conclusion, Sri Aurobindo shocks our mind. Because a good man dies or falls and the evil live in triumph, is God therefore evil? I do not see the logic of the consequence. Some elementary logic Sri Aurobindo is teaching. I must first be convinced that death and failure are evil. I sometimes think that when they come, they are our supreme momentary good. But we are the fools of our hearts and nerves and argue that what they do not like or desire must of course be an evil. This is how we look at life. I desired something, it didn't happen that way. So we want God to be an omnipotent God. That's why, you know, everybody says Bhagwan sarvasaktiman hai. But very seldom you will hear God is sarvagya, omniscient. We want an almighty God, but almighty God is the service of my desire. We want him like a genie in the bottle. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it because I can do it. But whether we like it or not, he's also sarvagya. So he knows what is best for us. So the disciple asks a question. But what about those who are unlucky and always fail in everything they do? This is also true. What about those? Of course, Sri Aurobindo has explained it in many ways. One of the places he explains beautifully. Some lives are lives of preparation. Whole life, you will try for something or the other, it doesn't work out. And the mother says, some people think that these people who are trying are mad, they are megalomaniac. She says, no, they are trying something which will bear fruits in the life to come. And that's how Sri Aurobindo also, you'll see some people. So it's a very interesting way to look at karma. Whatever you are striving for, that will increase in you. So karma is not a moral conception about good and bad. You tried to get wealth, but you never succeeded. Could not clear any of the exams, or tried business, failed, tried another business, failed. But you are wanting wealth. So next life, you are born with wealth. So what is your experience? This is not what I want. I want something else. So this is how karmic law takes us on an evolutionary curve. Karmic law is not that you may want wealth, but if you are not a good person, you will not become rich. No, it doesn't work like that. You may be a good person and never become rich. You may be the most wicked person or, you know, but you may become rich. Why? Because the energy that you are striving with. See, in an exam, who actually ends up competing? Not the honest, simple devotee. I mean, he may or may not. But the one who is intelligent and who has done the hard work. But that is the justice of nature. In nature, justice is because for nature, it is the nature which has given all these things to different people. So if you use it, you will succeed. But that success does not really mean success in the largest sense of the word. That success may be a failure of the soul. This is where the bigger issue lies. So karmic law runs along two lines. One is outwardly. You have a certain energy, you put it, you will succeed. Doesn't matter. But deep inside, if you have deviated from the what can be called as dharma, the law of unfolding of truth, you have been driven by the desired self. Let's put it in a very simple way. So you will succeed. Doesn't matter. You may be by desired self, hook or crook, but you have the energy, you have applied it, you succeed. But you're driven by desired self. So at the end of it, you will discover the hollowness of it. So at the end, you believe, you wonder that was this life worth it? Or sometimes even a life may be spent without realizing, you know. MDH masala. Very happy. I mean, it's so crazy to see. Old man is so happy. He has become a masala king. But that's how it is, you know. Most people feel their idea of life, ultimate in life. But any person worth some sincerity will realize that it is not this. You know, ask people even in the world of glamour, they feel so hollow inside if they look. So people try to cover up that hollowness because it's, you know, very uncomfortable. So they run away from themselves. So you'll see people spending time with a lot of friends, partying. Why? Because they want to run away from themselves. They're very uncomfortable confronting themselves. They'll have parties, late night, sleep, get up, and you know, you're very busy. It looks you're a very busy person with all those phones and gadgets, but actually deep inside, if you just sit momentarily, you realize that hollowness inside. You want to fill it with number of objects. So outward success, why? Nature gave you an energy. Now, if this same energy you used in the way of dharma, let's say by dharma I mean not by desired self, but in the right way, the same energy, you will see now the energy also increases. And with it, the joy. That's the difference. To make it very simple, if somebody is endowed with intelligence and he uses intelligence to deceive people, well, you can. You will succeed. Because there are simple people, that those crooked fellows are all very intelligent. They are such psychologists that they know that they can sell a product just by saying, oh, today you are dressed well. Yeah, that's how psychology works. So when they knock for a product, you know, what do? You'll see that. They'll see, oh, your house is so well arranged. After that, 50% assurance that the product will sell. What is it? It's a misuse of intelligence. No, you're basically using a means. But there's another person. So you may succeed. You will get promoted and everything. But at the end of the day, you still, that thing which you thought you will get by all these means, will you will not get. Whereas there is another person who is intelligence. But he turns this intelligence to know what is the deeper meaning, what is truth, what is the higher things of life. His intelligence will become more and more luminous. One person's intelligence is becoming more and more gross. And for the other person, the intelligence is becoming more and more subtle. So you will see people who can immediately understand spiritual things very fast. Because the intelligence has become subtle. Whereas the others, very successful outwardly, but they cannot understand spiritual thing because the intelligence become gross. So this is how the karmic law operates. So she says, first, once and for all, you should know that luck, good or bad, does not exist. What to our ignorance looks like luck is simply the result of causes we know nothing about. This is what we just... It is certain that for someone who has desires, when his desires are not satisfied, it is a sign that the divine grace is with him and wants through experience to make him progress rapidly by teaching him that a willing and spontaneous surrender to the divine will is a much surer way to be happy in peace and light than the satisfaction of any desire. So this is the whole canvas. So once we understand there is a divine will, we are not the center of this universe. Things are not meant to satisfy our desires. Even if it takes the form of desire, you have to still keep connecting it with the dharma, with the deeper will. Keep offering, keep surrendering, so that slowly all the mixtures will go away. And then the divine will manifest in its purity, in whatever aspect it must. And then Shrivindu says, when I look back on my past life, I see that if I had not failed and suffered, I would have lost my life's supreme blessings. Yet at the time of the suffering and failure, I was vexed with the sense of calamity. Shubhendu's own experience, in the Alipur jail. Because we cannot see anything but the one fact under our noses. Therefore we indulge in all... Now this part is mother's comment. Therefore we indulge in all these snifflings and clamors. Then Shubhendu continues, be silent, you foolish hearts. Slay the ego. Learn to see and feel vastly and universally. And then he reminds us, the perfect cosmic vision and cosmic sentiment is the cure of all error and suffering. But most men succeed only in enlarging the range of their ego. What is the so the disciple asks, what is the cosmic vision and cosmic sentiment and how they can be attained? So one of the ways, very simple ways, is that when we look at suffering, somebody asks this question. Often people ask, during COVID time they asked, my father, grandfather, he was a devotee, why did he die? So I have to ask him, first time death is happening on this planet. Cosmic sentiment, you look at death, what forms it has taken. I'm talking of right now very simple material death. What is it due to? Does it have to do with the devotee or not devotee? Of course, devotee is protected, but that's not the issue. The issue is death. It does strike you. Why? Simply because matter is imperfect. It is staring and glaring right in our faces. And as long as matter remains imperfect, as long as the body is not completely open and aligned to the divine forces, which is what the whole yoga is about, it will be subject to disease and death, whatever way you may try. So the cosmic sentiments looks at the problem and understands, not just my problem. That's what makes a Buddha. Why there is suffering? Individually he had no suffering, but he could see that people grow old, they have disease and they die. So the mother says, this simply means the vision of the whole earth at the same time, and the sentiment which is the result of this vision of the whole. So what do you experience when you look at creation? This whole contains all things at the same time. Light and darkness. Suffering and pleasure. Happiness and unhappiness. And all together makes a vibration of adoration turn towards the divine. So I can give an example of this exact feeling. So when there was tsunami here, so I was just wondering what's happening on the other side of the same sea. Arabian Sea. People were probably enjoying on the coast. And why the Arabian Sea? On this side you have it. What's happening in Bay of Bengal on further down? You see, then you realize that in this vastness, all kinds of things that are taking place. And all of them are trying to reach out to the divine. The cyclone in its cyclonic way, and the gentle breeze in its own gentle way. Nature is taking all of it and offering, just like in our being. So she says, and all together makes a vibration of adoration turn toward the divine, just as all sounds heard together make the supreme invocation to the divine, Om. Namaste.